right, welcome back, everyone, to part two of the League of Mediocre.
Part two.
The sequel, the better one.
Chapter
two.
Yeah, I had to think about it for a second, but yeah, well, because this
Dirty Deuce.
This is the more original. This isn't based off of something. This is created by, inspired
this is,
of.
This is going to be the Empire Strikes Back of anime year end podcast episodes.
Oh man, that's a lot of pressure, but I'm going to try to push through it.
It's going to be the Spider-Man 2 to Raimi's Spider-Man 1.
I like that. That's
dark,
a good goal.
It's going to be the Dark Knight to Batman Beyond.
Oh, that's a lot more pressure. Go back to the Empire Strikes Back one. I think I can manage that one. You know what? At the very least, I want to shoot for Temple of Doom to the original Raiders of the Lost Ark.
So different but unappreciated.
Yes. Part two of the League of Mediocre Gentlemen's anime of 2018 rundown, review, awards, whatever you want to call it, based off of the Crunchyroll's nominations that they decided to do their thing with. We had part one, where we almost exclusively went through the entire ones of Crunchyroll's, plus anime or characters that we thought should have been added to it. And now this is our part two, which is categories that we think should have been there. And Ian, before we get in, because of time constraints last time, I did just want to end our best fight scene category with just two points that I, the two ones that I wanted to think that they could have been there. One being that I definitely think could have hung around, although none of these I think should win. I just thought that they should be mentioned. And the first one we kind of talked about a lot on the last one, that's Joe versus Yuri in Megalobox.
Hype!
I think it's interesting with Megalobox because the fights aren't actually that great. Am I wrong in saying that? comparatively.
Before everyone just tunes out of this.
I know.
I'm going to say I really enjoy the fights in Megalobox. However, they weren't what I expected going into the show.
Yes, because... And I don't know actually what I was trying to expect from this show. I kind of, like, when I first kind of heard about it, I thought that it was described almost like it was hype as balls. And I was almost expecting, and this is me putting expectations up to, like, sky high, but I almost was expecting, like, a Fate Zero choreographed fight kind of a thing going on. And
yeah, it was much more grounded, right?
Much more grounded. And I mean, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy the fights. I think that they served exactly the purpose that they need to. It was just like, by the time the first fight was over, suddenly I realized, oh, this is not nearly as spectacular as I thought that was going to be.
It was not as crazy. Like, it was much more grounded in, like, real boxing than I expected it to be. Like, all the techniques and the drilling and whatnot was pretty much just regular boxing, which was pretty cool because I didn't know very much about boxing going into this show. So I thought that was neat. And then the megalo part of the Megalobox was kind of tertiary. It was an add-on, as if you will.
Yeah. Honestly, I think that for what this show kind of looks like and advertises for, it's actually closer to like a sports anime than anything else, right?
I know, right? Like it was not as going into it, just the premise made me think, oh, this is just going to be nuts. Like, it's going to be crazy.
Same.
It was
about the same thing.
But it was boxing with a little extra.
It was a good extra, too.
So, yeah, I think the fights, they weren't as stylistically crazy, but they were. They did have a very unique style, just not the one that I expected it to be. Because, like, looking at the previews that we did before we started watching it, like little clips where you see people with, you know, metal crap strapped to their bodies, beating the hell out of each other. You think this is going to be just unrealistically, bombastic. But as it turned out, there was a lot of nuance in the fight scenes that was pretty cool, but it took a different eye to look at it. It wasn't like we were kind of misled by thinking, oh, it's going to be hype as balls. And it actually ended up being like a couple of moments of intense hype, but mostly it was a bit of a slower burn with a ton of anime nostalgia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so, obviously, the culmination is the Joe versus Yuri fight, which I think we said a lot about in the first part, where it's not even really the fight that we're hyped about at this point, because, as you pointed out, Yuri removing his gear in order to fight Joe on an even playing field was actually stealing a little bit of the spotlight, or a lot of the spotlight, from the actual fight. Like, we got our climax a little earlier than I think we expected it to.
Right. It was just such an emotionally resonant moment, because that essentially meant that Joe won. Like, he validated himself to Yuri to the point, because the whole thing was that Yuri said, you know, I don't fight stray dogs. Like, you don't even deserve to be in the ring with me. And then Yuri deciding, I want to fight him on an even playing field because I respect him so goddamn much.
Yeah.
Was it essentially meant that Joe won. He won. He got exactly what he wanted, which was validation. Like, that, you know, he wanted to be viewed as an equal by these great fighters. So that meant that it kind of took the wind out of the sails of the last fight. Not that it wasn't a great fight, but there was no longer any sense of, like, tension that Joe was being underestimated. Yuri pretty much said, like, I respect you. Let's do this, like equals, which was super cool, but also made it hard to hate him. So it was like, you're just sitting there, like, respecting the technical brilliance of the fighters, not necessarily rooting for one super hard. Because I wanted Joe to win, but at the same time, you grow to like Yuri, so it's not like you want him to get his ass beat.
Right. No, agreed. And I think also Yuri taking the gear off, in addition to admitting that Joe, he respects Joe, I think also it's Yuri kind of remembering why he's doing this to begin with, and the whole, like, genuine article that they keep kind of pounding into you throughout the show about, like, is this, like, what you call a genuine article? Is this, like, the real deal, the legit fighter? I think it's Yuri proving not only that, it's Yuri showing not only that Joe is the genuine article, but Yuri proving he is too. So it's kind of a cool
thing. Agree.
It's almost like the fight is actually just a demonstration of that principle more than it is about, like, proving anything else at that point. Like, just the fact that they're both in that ring without the gear on was enough to kind of, like, honestly, you could have had, like, because the show was so, had such a habit of shutting the fights, like, turning the fights off before, like, the final moment of who won and stuff, or, like, they would cut off certain pieces or sum up certain rounds or something. Like, I think in one of Joe's fight, they legitimately start us off in, like, round three or something, and, like, flash forward. So I could honestly
feel slightly rushed.
I could see them doing the same thing with, like, literally just Joe and Yuri entering the field, and Megalobox could have just, like, boom, and then just here is the end, and you're like, wait, what happened to the fight? You're just sitting there wondering, because that's what Megalobox the show did to us a lot of times.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing, because it almost was like, well, it doesn't really matter who won, because, like, for all the aforementioned reasons, but it was nice that they did tell us.
So. Right. Everyone got to where they needed to be and where they were going. So the only one I wanted to mention is, this is one that I don't think is in any caliber to the stuff that's been nominated, although maybe to the same caliber of Hina versus Anzu and Hinamatsuri. But, like, I just wanted to give a shout out to the Immortal Sugimoto versus the Russians in episode 1 of Golden Kamuy. It's based. This is just me having, like, anyone who ever knows me knows that I have a super massive hard on for the 1900s era and World War I. And this scene in the very, very beginning of this show is all these Japanese soldiers lined up in their trenches in Hokkaido. So it's like snows everywhere. And the Russians are on this, like, hillside, and the Japanese are given the order to go, and they have to charge the line like you do in World War I, and fighting through the snow, bullets, and, like, barbed wire as they're charging up this hill. And Sugimoto is one of the only ones to get to the trench where the Russians are. And then when he's in there, he's got to start fighting the Russians. And it's not a super long, it's like one of those typical opening anime scenes for a show or something, but, like, the World War I and the 1900s, like, historian kid inside of me is just, like gleeing with happiness at seeing, like, just this tiny little moment of historical reenactment happening. So I think it was a cool scene. It's short. I think it's more appreciative for people like me than people as a whole, but I just really wanted to just mention it just because I'm a dork like that.
I'm going to have to see if I can find a clip of that fight. That sounds pretty cool.
It's pretty nice. It's well done, and it's where he gets his nickname, the Immortal Sugimoto. So starting off the whole series. All right, so Ian, I think you picked All for One versus All Might for this best fight scene, right?
I did. You know, I felt that it was really built up well. It was, again, not necessarily because of the technical brilliance of the fight, but because of all of the emotional weight. Like, it did make the last clash in that fight did make me tear up. And the, you know, just the passing of the torch and so many, there was so much thematically going on in that fight that I thought was just wonderful, just beautifully brought together as far as a story, which the showrunners have shown that they could do over and over again.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's if you're judging it just based on like technical brilliance, I don't think that it wins. But I think that based on like story and character drama, I think it really punches above its weight class.
Well, a good fight scene, in my opinion, always has that like rootedness into the story where like it's not just the fight itself, it's like the weight of the fight, and like it showcases not only how they all got here and they're all fighting for something, but also just like it showcases what a character is capable of and their own styling of fighting that they've accumulated along the way or they're taught or whatever. And I think that All Might, we all kind of knew who All Might was, we all knew very real his limitations, and seeing that fight was really like worth the wait a little bit. It sucks because, you know, you're getting literally the last little bit of All Might, in all caps, I should say, because, you know, now it's All Might, you know,
Might the teacher, All Might, yeah. Vanilla version. All Might the later years.
Yeah. And it's not, I mean, not that, you know, having All Might around is still better than nothing, but it's like, obviously he is not going to be fighting All for One anymore. And so seeing this fight of him giving out that last little bit of, like, strength, it's not like watching Goku or Gohan in Dragon Ball Z, and I'm not saying Dragon Ball Super because I haven't seen that, so I can't make this judgment, but, like, where they start the fight healthy and fine, and they fight the bad guy, and then when they're finally beaten down, they just pull that, like, last little bit out of them and come back. No, no.
We need to go even further beyond.
God damn it. Like, we knew coming into this fight that those chips were stacked against All Might because we were on a time limit. The moment he's in All Might, like, muscle form, there's an invisible clock ticking in our heads.
And you feel it, right?
Yeah.
Because they establish it very clearly, the rules with All Might nowadays. Yep.
Very clearly in the first season, and very clearly they re-emphasize in the second that he is actually losing time the longer it's going on, that he's getting shorter and shorter time in his fighting form.
And you really feel that. Like, it really amps up the tension with any scene that he's fighting in, because in your head, at the back of your mind, you're thinking, all right, let's wrap this up quick, because you know you don't have a lot of time.
It's basically like they have One Punch Man. If One Punch Man loses his powers after 30 minutes or an hour or whatever the time limit has reduced to, and so you know that he can win, you're just like, he's got to do it quick, though, because if the bad guy stalls him any length of time, that is not All Might's strength. So seeing it against them and when they had, I don't know if you would include the part of Midoriya getting Kachin out of there as part of the fight. I kind of almost want to, because he's technically fighting All for One at that point, but I think
I think it counts. I mean, it's nice. It's a nice bit of story that for the other characters to, you know, contribute, but in a smart way.
Right.
So, and it helps, and it really helps All Might to like be able to take the weighted clothing off, as it were.
If that part's included in the fight, I feel a lot better about picking All for One versus All Might over Satan versus Devil Man. Just because Satan versus Devil Man I'll get to that in the best moment / sequence category that we've created down there. But there's hang-ups I have about how Devil Man Crybaby ends up ending. And that kind of is a result of this fight that makes me sort of like, I know it's coming. It's just, this is a good fight, but, and then that stinking but sticks there. With All Might versus All For One, there is no but. It's like, this is a good fight. The end. So, anyway, let's go to the last category of Crunchyroll's thing that we just didn't get to last time. So last one, and then we'll do our original categories. So best continuing series. This was a weird one because there is a couple in here that I thought was like either they kind of sniped their way in there. They snuck in here. And then another one that since it's in, I'm surprised that the ones I'll have suggested didn't make it. So the anime that are included, The Ancient Magus Bride, Dragon Ball Super, Black Clover, Marsh Comes In Like a Lion, One Piece, and Boruto, Naruto Next Generations.
I have questions.
I have two. I will let you go first, though, because I've talked a lot.
So my first question is, does Ancient Magus Bride really count as a continuing series?
That's number one. Yeah, that's the one I thought that kind of snuck in here somehow. I mean, yes.
Can you explain this to me? I don't understand.
So Ancient Magus Bride was fall 2017. At least their first half was. The second half, which is how this somehow counted for this, is winter 2018.
That sounds like cheating.
Yeah, I think... So, between something like this, between Crunchyroll putting manga... Momonga in Best Antagonist, and I think there was like... putting in the pillows twice... into their best opening. It feels like Crunchyroll was just a little too cute with trying to be, like, clever or trying to, like, one-up itself or something. I don't know how to 100% describe it, but there was this weird feeling of, like, I guess technically you could have this here, but yeah, couldn't you have gone with something more original or, like, something that actually would belong in this category? And
I'm
we all know...
I'm not sure what the decision-making process was with this.
I don't have a problem with it being here because I like Ancient Magus Bride, and ultimately that was the one I ended up choosing. But but it shouldn't really be here just because... Again, and this is actually in stipulation to the fact that because we're all only limited to six choices, like, it probably shouldn't be here over... the ones that I'm going to list in a second, because it's just, the only reason it was a continuous was just because its full season hadn't ended yet. So it's like, I'm curious about what Crunchyroll's definition of continuing series is, because it's a little unfair to say that Ancient Magus Bride makes it in here because of the fact that it continued the rest of its first season. Like, it was always going to have that first season.
It just seems like a very weird thing. But whatever, it's there. I personally, my questions come to best beyond that. Because everyone knows, like, I've talked about it enough. Everyone knows how much I love Hirooka.
Yep.
You know, I felt like it probably could have been in this category.
I honestly agree. And like... if you're going to overcorrect, or if you're going to correct for last year because it won so many categories, I'm fine. I begrudgingly accept that reason. But, like, this is the category where, like, it makes sense for any anime show to win continuously because it's in the title of the award, Best Continuing Series. So right. If you want to have, like, you have One Piece in here, which is going on for, like, decades. You've got Boruto in here, which at this point, combining with Naruto, is almost decades. Dragon Ball Super is, like, 100 years, it feels like we've had Dragon Ball, like, going on forever. It's just odd that you wouldn't put My Hero Academia in, especially considering it third season was... so good that it's odd that you would snub it so hard.
And then the last one for me that you also had listed that I thought was a little curious, even though I've never watched it, I know it by reputation, of course. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure didn't make the list.
Yeah.
Which I felt was also a bit suspect.
So talking with my roommate about JoJo is weird because, one, it's a weird show. As everyone who's ever watched it knows. But the thing about it, when I brought it up saying, like, I'm surprised it wasn't in here either, his response was not, yeah, you're right. His response was, well, it's hard to consider it continuous because of its odd timeline that it has, because it's not the same characters each time.
it's like generations that are all sort of separated by like time gaps and leaps and stuff, and they go backwards to other characters that are the main now, and it's a very weird sort of a thing. So he goes, it's odd to call it like a continuing series when each one kind of stands alone but also follows the last one. And I'm like, oh god, that sounded complicated, but also a very JoJo Bizarre Adventure answer. So I still think it does count because it's still called JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I don't care what's after the colon. It's still in the same universe and it clearly follows something. Like, you're not going to tell people to go watch Golden Wind before watching the first one. So, and especially with such a strong cult and meme, like, game that, cult following and meme game that JoJo's has, I'm surprised that it's like, Mansion Mango Sprite is here, and March Comes In Like a Lion is here, but this one isn't, and My Hero Academia isn't.
I agree. But anyway, I mean, past that, you know, as far as ones that are in it, that, like, I don't, I haven't watched Black Clover, so I'm not going to...
I can't get through the first season, so it's going to be hard.
Yeah. So, I mean, and, like, I know One Piece, of course. I have watched it. I haven't watched the recent episodes, but I know it. I know Boruto has gotten a lot better. Mm-hmm. I will say that Dragon Ball Super, I have mixed feelings about. I think that it's in there mostly as a nod to the fact that it was the final season.
Yeah.
And that's great and all. But on the whole, Dragon Ball has turned into this like overbloated, low effort. That's not the right word. Dragon Ball is Dragon Ball.
It's escalated to the point where they're in other like dimensional realms or something now. Technically they've always had it. They always had it because King Kai was like the ruler of like the seventh
god,
realm or something,
as
yeah,
it were.
Or the person in overseeing. But like, yeah, the escalation has gone from like we'll throw Goku into the galaxy and find someone strong to we'll throw Goku into other realms to find someone strong. It's just chill out, guys.
Well, there's no real threat, just because the formula has gotten stale, in my opinion. And then also, it used to be that Goku and friends were defending something when they were doing all of the ridiculous fighting. The Earth was in danger, or they needed to get their friends back with the Dragon Balls, or whatever. But now, like, this was a pretty contrived... In this season, it was a pretty contrived reason to get all these fighters together, by doing the tournament, which
right.
I don't think anyone really expected would result in the erasing of all of those universes. So it was, to me, it felt kind of contrived. It was just to get everyone together to have this big old battle royale because people like battle royales. And I'm just like, all right, like this seems kind of lazy like in that sense. The animation was great. Some of the fights were really good. Particularly, I would note, I really enjoyed Goku versus Kefla. Felt that was really good. But at the end of the day, there was no emotional weight to any of it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, like, whereas, like, All Might versus All for One made me almost cry, Goku versus Jiren was kind of hypey, but at the end of the day, like, there was no emotional investment.
Hearing you describe Goku versus Jiren in the last fight made it sound like it was fanfic, because like the fact that I don't know anything about Dragon Ball Super. I don't know if it follows GT or if it's its own thing after Z, because I know people and the creator really hated GT and said it was a mistake. But all I know is I have no idea when it happened. But last I checked, Frieza was dead and an enemy of Goku, and Android 17 was an angsty teenager who just didn't get things. So
yeah.
Hearing them all team up sounds like someone's fan fiction.
That's the thing. Like, the best part of the fight between Goku and Jiren was the part where Frieza and Android 17 joined in. And like, and it does sound kind of fanficky. It was, but the reason it was the best part was because everyone in it was so exhausted and beaten down that there was a lot of desperation. So there was actual emotion in there, as opposed to Jiren and Goku just like throwing punches at each other so fast that you can't even follow it with the eye. Like, which isn't, to me, that's boring.
That's really boring.
But,
yeah. Same
but
here.
Like at the end of the fight, Goku was so spent he couldn't even maintain his base Super Saiyan form anymore. And yet they're slugging it out like two prize fighters that have nothing left. The final clash involved Goku like throwing himself at Jiren, only like flashing in and out of Super Saiyan 1 because that's all he could manage. And that was the best part of the fight because it was like there was actual sense of threat and desperation. But for like the first 90% of the fight, it's just Goku and Jiren using their techniques being like gods and no threat. And so it's like it's boring because they're too powerful.
Yeah, and that's so I think that that's why Boruto sounds like a better show to me, because it reset things. Like, instead of just continuously following Naruto, instead of continuously following Naruto, it resets itself with Naruto's son, and you get to see, you kind of root for him now, so there's more like that feeling of limitation again, to sort of a new hero rises, a new person you follow, and they have to go through the hero's journey and whatnot. But it still throws you a bone. I feel like the Naruto and Sasuke versus whoever that guy they fought was, Momoshiki. I feel like that was literally just like a reward for people who've stuck around since the very beginning of Naruto. So, but it's cool to sort of have that reset. Like, I feel like Dragon Ball could use a reset to like drop Goku, let him retire and be a teacher or something, and then have a new, like, younger or amateur-esque fighter start over from the beginning and kind of, bring us back to Earth, literally and figuratively, so we can kind of get that feeling of, I don't know if he's going to be able to win. Because with Goku, it's like, either he's going to win, or he'll die, get resurrected, and then he wins.
Yep. I mean, I don't have anything else to really add to that. I felt like you were right on point. I feel like you were right on point.
So, anime that I thought should be there, we've already mentioned both JoJo's and My Hero Academia. Other ones that I think could have hung around in this category, I just want to give a shout out to Fairy Tail. While I have dropped off in the show because it gets real repeaty. I've never seen it.
What is it even about?
Oh, man, that's a difficult thing.
All right, Reader's Digest, please.
So Fairy Tail is a organization, like a little, like, let's call it a club for easy terms, of basically magic users who go around collecting quests, or rather not collecting, but the citizens of their city will come and give them quests for them to complete to help them out. Think of them like a mercenary band, but like friendlier. And it follows Natsu and this one girl, Lucy. And so that's basically it. Each quest ends up being like so that it really actually starts with Lucy, who just wants to join this like organization, and it's mostly about her just getting enough money that she can rent her apartment. And it's fine. The little quests start off as small little dinky things, and there's humor in it all over the place, and then it rises into like a very Dragon Ball Z-esque arc. With a lot of like fist punching and like use of magic, so everyone's got their own use, like specific magical ability that they have. Nanzu is fire based. Lucy is probably the most unique in the sense that she has these like key charm things, and she's able to make packs with celestial beings that feed off of her mana. So depending on which one she summons, they have a different sort of a power that can be used for a limited time. But then you've got someone like Urza, who has the ability to change armor, that, and based on which armor she's wearing, it's a different sort of power that she has. And then you've got a nice guy, and you've got all sorts of weird ones in there. Anyway, it's fine in the first, like Netflix has, I think, a decent amount of episodes in the very like beginning. Those are probably enough to call it or quits after that.
You really know how to sell a show.
It's like 50 something episodes. The show, there's a lot of good emotional moments of people quitting the organization or joining it. The soundtrack's pretty good, even though it's literally just the same song that they play differently each time. It's just that they do it probably the best I've ever seen someone play the same song. The problem I have is I got to the point where not only were arcs starting to feel the same. They literally brought back enemies. Like, I was on this one with Lucy's as an arc that she, it was her main, like, let's find out about her family sort of thing. And they brought back these enemies that they had clearly defeated way, way, way back earlier in season one. And suddenly these enemies were like, even though they were missing like a lot of their key features and tricks that they had in season one, somehow they were beating the crap out of these people. And I go, you know, this seems like a good place for me to stop. I'm done. So that's where I left off. But I just put Fairy Tail here because for those who have been sticking with it and love this show, it's approaching its, or it's in its final season. And it feels like a little bit of an insult not to at least acknowledge the fact that it's ending soon. So, like, especially for something
it's
like
a bit of a middle finger when you after you do it for Dragon Ball.
Yeah, like you do it for Dragon Ball and you do it for One Piece. Like, it's,
well, One Piece is an ending, is it?
That's no. True. Forever. But like the fact of the matter is, One Piece has been going on forever.
I'm gonna die before One Piece ends.
Jeez, I hope not. But yeah, you're right. So the fact that Dragon Ball Super is here is kind of a middle finger to Fairy Tail. The fact that Ancient Magus Bride is a big middle finger to a lot of these. Like, I like Ancient Magus Bride. I don't think it counts as a continuing series because it just sort of continued its season. If this is best continuing season, I would understand, but that's not the category's title.
Yeah.
So, Fairy Tail. The only other two I have here that could have definitely pushed in pretty strong was A Certain Magical Index Season 3. I have not caught up to that. I've only done Season 1, and I've done Railgun, and I've started Season 2. I just haven't... It's a shonen show. I think it got oversold. I tried to get into it in the sense of like, oh, this will be a really cool magical world, and I was really into world building at the time, and I'm like, it's just not as much world building as it was advertised. Like, this is just fine. It's just not as good as I thought. Anyway, so it's there, and then Overlord Season 3. I think both of these are continuing series that are actually stronger and have been stronger than a lot of the ones mentioned. I think Black Clover, from what I've heard, this is the best season it's had so far. My issue is you have to go through the first season to get there, and I think that's a detriment. I mean, I know that we're not counting past year seasons here, but at least Overlord...
I mean, it's like you can't... Yeah, it's hard, right? Because, like, you know, barrier to entry. At this point, we're so spoiled for anime to watch.
Right.
And I'm behind on so many good ones that it's kind of hard for me to give serious attention to something where you're telling me, hey, the first 13 episodes are god awful, but I promise there's a payoff if you stick with it. I'm like, why don't I just watch these half a dozen shows that I have backed up in my need to watch list that are good right from the start?
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I think that the one I'm proud of that it's in here, and I'm actually like mini applauding Crunchyroll, is March Comes In Like a Lion. I've seen like the beginning of this series. I haven't seen this season or whatever, but it's really good. And I think that it's kind of, it's like throwing the indie video game into the awards ceremony. Like, it's not many people watch it. Not many people have heard of it, but it's really underrated, and it's still going on, and it's doing its thing, and it's doing its thing well. So I think that it's kind of cool that it's just here. But that being said, I'm still sort of like, I can't believe My Hero Academia is not here. It's the obvious choice.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
at the very least, it should have been the My Hero Academia Presents Best Continuing Series Award. Like, at the very least, come on, people.
I don't know. I could go on with it. I mean, if you're going to overcorrect, like, you know, dump, I don't know, you could always, like, to me, I don't get it, because if you're going to overcorrect, you're going to like rip them from a couple categories, why the hell is All for One in the best antagonist category?
Why is Deku in a best boy?
Yeah, you can even pull Deku from best boy because there was so many great so much great competition, but leave My Hero in this category. Like, to me, I'm like, I do not believe All for One is a serious contender for best villain. So, like, it just
got a lot of good villains.
It's
this year.
A little strange.
Yeah, it feels like they're sort of picking and choosing when they want to play by their rules. And I this is why I think Crunchyroll's getting closer to getting the hang, like getting this nailed down in this award thing. But this is very much a learning year, I think, where it's clear that they should start establishing a rule. Like, if you've won, like, this many categories, are you just going to throw the show out next year? Or aren't you? Like, it's weird that you pick and choose for certain categories that it, by all chances, this show has no business being in compared to other shows. But then the categories the show very much should be in, like Best Continuing Series and Best Fight. Like, I mean, it made it in Best Fight, so that's good. But, like, Best Continuing Series, like, how do you not put that one in there? I don't know. So, anyway.
Well, anyway.
Yeah. Which one did you end up picking? Sorry, I don't know if I heard yours.
Yeah, I ended up going with Ancient Magus Bride, even though I don't agree with being there. which is kind of weird, but I think part of that is because a bunch of these I haven't watched. And I did watch Dragon Ball Super, and I have watched enough of One Piece where I'm just like, Magus Bride was better.
Yeah, that's so the thing. If you're going to dangle something like Magus Bride in front of my face, I'm going to pick it. Even though I know it shouldn't be in this category, I just like that show better than the options you gave
right.
you
presented like, well, me. Since you're here.
Yeah. All right, so that ends the Crunchyroll's categories. Let's start up with the ones that I've kind of thrown in. And if you've got ones, I've only nominated a few for some of these because it's just kind of that difficult task of the fact that I've only seen a finite amount of anime for the year. So it's mostly throwing the ones I have seen into certain categories and then also realizing that some of the shows I've watched are shit and don't belong in any of these categories. So... So the first one, Best Romance, the ones I've thrown in here are Bloom Into You, Darling in the Franxx, Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai, Wataoki, Love is Hard for Otaku, and Boarding School Juliet. I don't know if you saw any that you thought stood out. It doesn't have to be a romance anime, as I think I threw in, as Darling in the Franxx, I would hardly call a romance anime. But
it had some pretty strong romantic elements.
Yeah, between 02 and is the protagonist Shiro or Hiro?
Hiro.
Okay, so between Hiro and 02, that was probably the best part of the entire first two thirds of the show.
Yeah, I mean 02 really took the cake. Just in general, but their romance, especially particularly the episode of them as kids, was truly touching.
Yep, that was a good flashback. In a series, like they had some flashbacks that were like, well, this was a weird one. Like the one guy who was like, "Can we be pilots together or whatever?" And it's like, "You bet." It's just like, I guess if that's why you're upset with him, I guess.
But. Yeah, that was an odd thing to focus on because, all right, am I the only one that thought that they were playing that up as, like, that guy, I can't remember his name, that he had the hots for Hiro?
No, I thought the same thing, too, and I thought they were going to do something with it.
I thought that it was a romantic thing. Like, I thought that he, like, had fallen in love with Hiro, and then, but Hiro, like... no interest or whatever and like sort of like brushed him off. Oblivious / no interest / brushed him off and that really scarred him. But then when it turned out, I was like, no, he was just your friend and you know, wanted to pilot with you and that's it. I'm like, well, that doesn't have as much weight to me.
Yeah. His name was, oh my God, I almost remembered it. Mitsuru.
Yeah, and then he ends up with Kokoro in this weird forced romance just to get Kokoro away from the other guy.
Yeah, I just want to say that there was a moment...
baby.
Yeah, God. Possibly the best move Kokoro ends up doing because that guy went
that
really...
That guy had some problems, yeah.
Yeah, but like, so the beginning of that, I was like... I can buy this if you pace it well. And then they kind of hit a fast forward button on it. And I'm like, I don't like Kokoro. Like, just seemed like she got really odd.
Well, she played a huge dick move, right?
Yeah.
She basically said, no, I would never leave you. And it's like, I want to switch. It's like, what?
Yep.
But I mean, I get that was the point that like, they're trying to show like adolescent relationships as they really are. And that's absolutely something that happens to people because they can't deal with conflict at that age. Like, they don't want to make someone upset, but they want to do what they want to do.
Right.
So, yeah, but it certainly didn't paint her in a positive light.
No, and then it gets, like, even weirder because it just looks like she's, like, really into the bad boy and just wanting to have sex because she wants a kid, because it seems like a neat idea. Because
all of a sudden she has a, yeah, she has a maternal instinct now.
Yeah. I thought that, like, the reasoning behind it just felt odd.
The show wanted to explore that and at the same time be of a mech show with a lot of action and at the same time be a conspiracy show with the government. And it's like, it was juggling too many plates and then smashed all of them.
Yep.
But anyway. That's
a great one. Yeah. So, all right. So before I dive into Bloom to You, I just wanted to give a shout out to Reddit because I finished Bloom to You while, I was
That's
doing
a sentence that has never, ever been
I'm going to give a shout out to something more than just Reddit too, but like, so I finished Bloom to You in between the time of part one for this series and this one, part two here. And at the end of it, I was utterly confused about why people were praising and loving the show for so much. Because with how the show presents it, the relationship between you and Toko ends up looking like Toko is an emotional manipulator on you, forcing herself often on this girl. Now, obviously, she asks, like, is it all right to you multiple times. That would be fine if the show didn't give us Yu's internal dialogue. And Yu always makes it sound like she is guilted into going with Toko because of the fact that she doesn't want to upset her friend. And I was like, man, if Toko was a guy, I would think I'm watching an episode of Mad Men right now. Like, that's how I felt so often. Like, I felt uncomfortable with a lot of Toko's antics and just, like, forcefulness. So I went to Reddit onto our anime, and I was like, help me understand Bloom into You, because I don't get it. I was like, there's got to be something I'm missing. I feel like I'm the 0.01% against 99.99% of people out there who love this show. And so, I made multiple paragraphs, and I hit the post button, and I expected to be ripped the hell apart. To my wonderful surprise, I was not. People were extremely respectful. People were very much understanding and trying their best to be constructive in explaining to me what they liked about Bloom into You, what they saw, and what I might have seen that was, like, they saw the same thing, but they saw interpreted it differently. And while I had some people in my camp of being weirded out by certain scenes, a lot of people were like, one, it's the nature of the genre. I think that the Yuri romance genre actually hurts Bloom into You a little bit because it confuses how the overall performance ends up going, with a lot of it looking more sexual harassment-esque than it probably would have intended if it was in literally any other genre. Because a lot of tropes that I had never that I would never pick up on, because this is my first Yuri romance anime, a lot of people were very much used to, it's commonplace apparently in these kind of shows, that they didn't think anything of it. So when I go in there looking at it, I'm like, this is like a step away from Toko raping you. And people were like, no, what? It's just, no, it's, you're overthinking it. And so that part, I want to give a shout out to, ex-Gila Monster, is the,
oh man, by name.
Yeah, I know. The, username who, was extremely patient and put in some of the most well thought out, like, explanations of the entire Yuri genre and how Bloom into You fits into it and how Bloom into You is like the best version of it. And then Seer of Things is the other username who really helped me figure out that Yu is actually just an unreliable narrator. And once that kind of like was said and they pointed out a lot of the things about Yu, it started to open up the fact that a lot of the stuff that I hear internally on Yu is Yu kind of trying to lie to us because she's lying to herself at the same time. So it's an interesting thing. The whole show, I might have to rewatch it if I ever can kind of like calm down off of it. Like I literally finished it only like a couple, like a day ago. And so, I think it's an interesting one. So at least I wanted to give a shout out to Best Romance of it because of the fact that it is a romance anime through and through. Like that's the whole thing. It's an odd show. It's not my favorite romance, but it's a lot of people's. And now that I've gone through a ton of comments and talk about this show and discussions, I can at least now understand this show of why it's being praised. I might not still enjoy it the same level that everyone else might, but I no longer think of it as this, like, lesbian Mad Men show that I was, like, seeing it as. So, very interesting one. I just wanted to kind of go into that for a second because it was a very unique experience. Usually Reddit is when you have a different opinion to people who have very strong opinions about their favorite thing, usually on Reddit, that turns into a very ugly conversation very fast. And I didn't have anyone.
Yeah. Oh, are you saying that the people of Reddit are easily triggered into violent responses to people who don't agree with their points of view?
Only a little bit.
Let me be clear here, because I believe that a lot of the reason for the positive responses that you got was because of how you framed the post in the first place, which was overwhelmingly open to be proven that you were incorrect and yes, to be given like an alternative viewpoint. And you were very, very open-minded to that. And I felt like that probably diffused any potential, clickbaity, awful people who would just come in and be like, well, you're just a homophobe. Like, you know, I think it really took the wind out of any sails that were possibly riding into rain on your parade by basically saying, look, I totally accept that I might not be getting something here. Can you guys just help me figure it out? And yes, that's when you approach it in that way, rather than like if you had made a post just saying, I don't know what the hell everyone loves about this show. Seems like just a girl trying to rape another girl. And like, you know, I don't know what you guys like. Then, of course, I think it would have turned out way worse. So yeah, kudos also to you, Richard,
for creating
a constructive conversation with the internet, which, you know, is not indicative of the norm.
This is true. Well, I knew that I was in the minority, and unlike other times where I'm like, I'm perfectly okay with being in the minority, like not liking Sandra Bullock as an actress, this was a minority that I was so far removed into. I was like, I think I'm the only one in here. Like, I don't think there's anyone else. Oh, I'm in the wrong place. And I was like, I was at the point where I'm like, I really hope I'm a homophobe because that would be better than being stupid. And I was so scared of this. I was like, okay, put in your perspective, open it up, see what they have, argue with them, kind of like throw, if they don't go all the way in, kind of be like, yeah, well, the shed scene was really cringy because of the fact that Toku is basically like pushing you against the wall and you has to like, there's no way out. It's very, and see what they say. And people responded in kind and they're like, yes, but that whole wall thump thing that goes on here, that is 100% a Yuri romance trope. Like that's normal in there. It's not her pushing someone against it. It's her doing that hand slap thing that what a guy would do in like a girl, and like gets his face real close and her heart starts beating and it's just like, I want you. And she's like, oh, senpai! Like that kind of a thing. So I was like, holy crap, you were absolutely right. I had no, like, I have no idea what I'm getting into with this show because I have never watched any other shows like this before. So obviously these things are going right over my head, and that's what I was missing. And I was like, okay, I'm back. I get it. I'm out of the room. I don't know if there's anyone else in that room, but I've left. So, all right. So we've obviously talked about Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai a ton.
Wait, have we? Have we gushed over it enough?
So
Our underwear sufficiently wet for it?
Oh, man. Yeah. I kind of want to skip it, but unless you want to bring up something specific about romance that you think would be pertinent, I'm all for it.
I don't think that I could add anything that I haven't already said. I think that, you know, as far as romance, you know, husbando of the year and waifu of the year, yeah, both both in the same show. They're waifu both great. Laifu. I hope that, huh? She is the waifu for laifu. I think, you know, both of them are great. I hope that they have a happy fake life together. So
make lots of babies.
make lots of 2D babies. Yeah, I can't agree more. So there's nothing really that I could say that I haven't already said.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to be the one to do the next two because they're both on Amazon and I watched them because I was bored. Wataoki, Love is Hard for Otaku. I believe that was winter or spring. I cannot quite remember the season it came out on, but my instinct is that it was somewhere in that, it was either in January or March kind of area. Anyway, it's about Narumi. She's just starts her new job as this office in this office or whatever, and she is similar to like a Gretzko. She has her own little secret, it's that she's a yaoi fangirl and likes video games and is like super dorky and nerdy. So what she doesn't realize is in her office is her old childhood friend Hirotaka, who is very outgoingly, not secret at all, a video game nerd and game addict and everything. Like, legitimately, when he finishes his work, he'll just sit at his desk with a Nintendo Switch and start playing it in front of everyone. And at a certain point, he decides to ask Narumi out, and she agrees because she is, in fact, single. And it starts off kind of cringy. I can't just call Bloomin' to You cringy. But this is the different type of cringy. This is like two nerds who have no social.
Super awkward.
Yeah, like they just don't have social interactions down, and they're really like bad at it. So it goes from that to them actually developing a pretty good bond, and then becoming more and more intimate as the show goes on, as they get more comfortable in not only how social interactions are supposed to be with girlfriend boyfriend, but also just with each other, that where she's able to be herself a little bit more because she's the one who's been hiding her hobbies. But a lot of their dates end with them just literally playing like GameCube or something.
Oh, that sounds great.
I know, it's a great. It turns into one of those. This show just seems like it's a fanfic for somebody who's just not having like the best life right now. They're
it
like,
sounds like it's setting unrealistic expectations for relationships.
Whoa. Like, isn't my setting unrealistic expectations for Rascal? So at the same time, there's also this other couple in the office that Hirotaka is friends with, and they are, I think they're married or engaged. I can't remember, but clearly the step above the, like, if there's the two main characters, Narumi and Hirotaka, are the current state of their relationship, these two are the next step that they could potentially get to. And one of them is the girl, she actually cosplays, and often as guys, and of characters from like video games and manga and stuff, and seeing them hang out, they almost act as like as a like guiding force for them to sort of help them along their way. But their relationship themselves is actually pretty interesting and cool as well, because like it's that like reinforcement stuff where like, you know, you don't want your relationship to go stale, and the girl kind of gets worried that the guy just might not like appreciate her because of how routine a lot of their stuff has become. So it's an interesting show. It's really funny a lot of the times. It could be in best comedy as well. So it's not like, I don't think I would say it's got a lot of depth compared to maybe Bloomin' to You or Bunny Girl, but like it does its job really well, and I enjoyed just the, I don't know. I don't want to say fanficiness because that's not the right term. But, you know, like, I enjoyed the unrealistic expectations.
Oh, gosh.
So the last one I put on here, Boring Girl Juliet. I don't think this really deserves to be up here with them, but I just want to give a shout out to it.
Then why did you add it?
Because it's the only other romance I have.
Oh, my God.
This is a show that I thought for sure I would drop off of, and I probably should have. But there was something goofy about it that always kind of made me smile and entertained me. So it's literally Romeo and Juliet for Japanese. It's the anime Romeo and Juliet. It's the story that's been told so many times. I hate it. But like, so Juliet, it's Juliet Persia, and she's the European looking, she's in this European side of the college that they're in. It also takes place in some college or university or sporting school or something. Dahlia Academy is what it's called. And then it's Romeo in Yuzuka, and he is on sort of the Japanese side of this campus. And the two sides, obviously, you know, they don't get along, and they hate each other. You've heard this before.
What'll happen next?
And Romeo and Juliet, they've been, like, rivals this whole time, and he's always pulling pranks on her and stuff, but, like, he's only been doing this because he really has been, like, in love with her for his entire life, and finally confesses, which... That's,
oh, I see. So he flirts like a fifth grader.
Yes, he does. And I always appreciate, and I think that's probably why I included this on this list, is I appreciate anime that don't beat around the goddamn bush. And Boarding School Juliet, similar to Rascal, they get the relationship started and then let it continue. They don't try to milk that suspense of will they or won't they. They get in, they get the job done, and then they realize that they can still do stuff with this premise along the way, which obviously now they have to keep it secret, and there's hijinks, and there's a lot of funny moments. It almost feels like it could have gone harem, because there's so many girls characters in this show, but it never does. Like, no one else is trying to go out with Romeo. If anything, it's almost a reverse harem. A lot of people keep trying to go out with Juliet. So... I enjoyed it. It's a silly thing. It's nowhere near as strong as Bloomin' to You, Darling the Franks, and Rascal, but it still was enough that I just kind of wanted to mention that it's out there.
Hmm. All right. Well, I approve of that then.
All right. I guess of those, Ian, which one would you vote for? Because I'm curious between two that I think I would... guess.
I mean,
sure.
My obvious one will be Rascal.
Okay.
That's my obvious one.
I was thinking you might have snuck in 02 for a second there.
So that's the thing, though, is like if you're talking about, like, if you're nominating the show, then you have to take the show in its entirety. But if you're nominating just the romantic element of the show,
I would say how's this? Because I didn't write this down as well as I could have in the show notes, I would honestly say sort of like how they did the fights category of like Jiren vs. Goku from Dragon Ball Super. I would say like Bloomin' to You, Yu and Toko from Bloomin' to You, 02 and Hiro from Darling the Franks, Mai and Sakuta from Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai. Oh my god, I cannot pronounce her name so many times. Well, let's just say Romeo and Juliet from Boarding School Juliet, and then Narumi and Hiro Taka from Watakoi Love is Hardcore Taka.
All right, so it's still Rascal because okay. So here's the thing is that I love 02 as a character. Yes. I think she's great, really awesome until they turn her into a space waifu. But I think that Hiro has a lot to be leaves a lot to be desired as a protagonist. Now, he turns out to be pretty good after he gets a little bit of characterization in the mid game.
You mean after he gets his memory back?
Exactly, but like in the beginning he's blander than tofu.
Yeah.
He's just self-insert protagonist number 5. You know, he was like, even the character design was incredibly uninspired. I'm like, oh, look, it's Kirito, kind of. Like,
yeah, it's Kirito in, like, khakis.
Yeah, it's Kirito, but a little bit shorter.
Yep.
And with shorts on. Like, it was very bland and uninspired. And I get that that's kind of what they were going for because they wanted to emphasize later on the fact that he got his memory wiped. But not exactly the best way to have people root for your show. So the thing, Bunny Girl is so good because you love both characters. Mai and Sakata are both amazing, and I like both of them. But 02 is not amazing enough to make up for the fact that I thought Hero was pretty bland. And part of it, I guess, is by design, because 02 is such a assertive character with a strong set of personality traits.
She's very striking comparatively.
Yeah. So like Hero kind of had to be blander in order to contrast with her, but you could have still made him more interesting than he was.
Yeah. I think
the disagree. Do you think I'm off base?
No, there? No, actually the moment you talked about, and you started off separating them by 02 and Hero, that was all of a sudden when I'm clicked. I'm like, oh, this is just not as interesting of a relationship because of the fact that one of these two is not like the other. It's just not a... Like, the two... Like, it's something where the only reason I'm interested in Zero... Or the only reason I'm interested in Hero is because I project myself onto him. Not because he's doing anything to make me interested. The reason I'm interested in Sakuta is because he is the best version that I hope to be one day. Not because I can project myself onto him or anything. I'm interested to see how does he fix these situations. And the reason I like Mai... Well, okay, I like 02 too. It's hard to kind of compare those two because they're both great for different reasons. But like, as you can see, like there's a very clear strength of one of the males compared to the other. And yeah, I agree with you. So I also will take Mai and Sakuta. I enjoyed Love is Hard for Otaku. I am still kind of coming to terms with Bloomin' to You. I am blooming into Bloomin' to You. oh my god, can I just take a moment to say, oh my god, this show will not stop beating me over the head with its goddamn flower metaphors. Like, it's everywhere. Oh, the crap, it's everywhere. Like, there's in the very beginning, there's all this, like, stuff about sunlight, like, not hitting. It always looks like everything's a little bit, like, sun's coming through the branches of trees. That's how, like, all the lighting is done. And then, like, as the show goes on, it's getting brighter. And then, like, the opening and the closing, especially the opening, has nothing but, like, flower things coming into it. And I go, I get it. I fucking get it, okay? You got flowers. There's flowers. I get the metaphor.
Jeez.
Oh. But, yeah, so, sorry. I just had to say that, like, because...
Yeah, well, you know, some shows are like that. They're like, hey. Hey, do you get it?
Do you get it?
Do you get it?
Yes, I do. Thank you. All right, so let's move on to comedy. So I could easily put Love is Hard for Otaku into comedy as well, but instead I only have four right now. If you remember any, you're more than welcome to throw them in here. Obviously the first one is Zombieland Saga. I have Hino Matsuri. I technically have Golden Kamuy in here, and That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime. I think these are all pretty funny, if not cheerful. But what do you think, Ian? Do you have any other ones you could mention?
No, I mean, nothing that I've... Because like Konosuba was last year, correct? So
yes.
Because I started that. But that's
the dub just came out for that, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. It's actually not bad. I've listened to it. I was pleasantly surprised by their dub so far.
So I'm trying to think if I've watched any other shows.
Like, there are funny moments. Come off as comedy. Because, does Agretzko count as comedy?
Yeah, I would say that counts as comedy.
Okay, yeah, because I know, I think Honda-san counted as well, but I haven't seen Honda-san, so I didn't want to nominate something I hadn't seen.
I think Agretzko is comedy, so okay, then it could fit right in those, here.
Pop Team Epic probably could too. It looks like it's a funny show.
Agretzko is probably more comedy than Time else. I Got Reincarnated as a Slime.
Yeah, but I kind of wasn't sure what to do with Reincarnated as a Slime because it's hard to actually qualify that genre other than isekai, and I didn't want to put best isekai.
It has comedic elements for sure.
Yeah.
But I would say, in my opinion, I would say Zombieland Saga is the best out of them.
I definitely do as well. Sorry, I interrupted your reasoning.
No, you're fine. I think it's a very fun premise, and it's well executed, and especially just the character, between the character design as well as just what's his face, the manager. I can't remember his name.
Kotaro. Oh my god.
It's up here somewhere. He's in one of the categories.
Yeah. There it is. Kotaro Tatsumi.
He's just fucking hilarious. Like, laugh out loud funny.
Oh, yeah. The first episode, go, 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 go. It's just...
Ryo Kazaimasu!
Music! Come on! I almost... So you haven't seen the end, but there's a moment at the end where I thought for sure, like, there's this, like, soft, like, an interruption in the show, and I think to myself, like, he's gonna say it. He's gonna say, music, come on. And he never did, and I was just, like, holding on to, like, oh, he never said it! But, like, he said it so many times, I can't be upset by it. It was an interesting twist. I have Zombieland Saga as my favorite comedy, just because it's not just something that's like funny, but like really like legitimately made me laugh. To talk about how good Zombieland Saga is, my brother doesn't really like anime that much, and he loved Zombieland Saga. I've never seen him laugh harder and be more interested in what happens next on an episode than he had been with Zombieland Saga. Well, that's not true. The last time I've seen him do that is with One Punch Man. So it sort of has that same kind of comedic style to it as well. Although One Punch Man is more in that shonen, it is also a very funny anime.
Yep, I would definitely agree with that.
So, I have that as well. I think, Golden Kamuy is barely it's more of an action adventure thing, but there's so many comedic moments that just had me like roaring that I just really wanted to at least give a shout out to how good the comedy is in Golden Kamuy. Hinamatsuri is all comedy. If Zombieland Saga wasn't here this year, that would have been my number one. But Zombieland exists, so unfortunately Hinamatsuri has to be my number two. But it is definitely a very good show, and the comedy in it, it's kind of like half office humor, half like family humor, with weird sci-fi elements because you have a psychic girl with you. It's just an odd show, and with just odd premises abounding, and I think that's mostly the show's like straight, like all these shows kind of have a shtick that they do in order to make the laugh. So Zombieland Saga is like, what if idols but zombies? This one is with Hinamatsuri, it's like, what if Yakuza but with a daughter who's got psychic powers? And it's just, what kind of weird situations are they gonna get in? And they're all really weird situations, and they're all really funny. Since you just started watching, we haven't given That Time I Reincarnated as a Slime almost any FaceTime in this. So, you've caught up to a lot more episodes, Ian. Now's the best time as any. Like, what would you kind of think of this show in terms of, like, you've seen Grimgar, you've seen some of Konosuba, you've seen some of these, like, isekais, someone reborn in another world. What's your take on one where you're born as a slime?
So this one, I'm about 13 episodes in. It's the show I'm trying to finish currently. I would say if there was a category for biggest surprise of the year, this would be next to Zombieland Saga, this one would be it for me.
Right.
Because when I first heard of the concept, I thought that sounds dumb. Like, that sounds like a gimmick. And I was like, that sounds like a really dumb gimmick. It's like, oh, it's isekai, but with a
slime.
I was like, how am I supposed to relate to a slime? That sounds dumb. This is probably, I'm like, this is the kind of show that's going to have one joke.
Yep.
That the character is a slime, and that's it. Like, I have no interest in that. And then I kept hearing that it was really good, and I was like, oh, fine. So I started watching, and this show, man, it is so charming. Like, it is so cute. It's not cute in like a moe way. It's cute in a way where you're just like, how do I like this character so much? It's a slime.
Right.
I don't get it. Like,
lost you.
They have an overpowered protagonist,
yep,
which we have here. But the overpowered protagonist is almost always played as kind of dumb. Like, you know, that kind of dumb anime male protagonist.
Yeah.
Or as a broody, like, woe is me, my life is hard, I am so alone protagonist. And this one, it's just like this, it's just a dude who wants to do the right thing, and he isn't dumb. Like, and he doesn't think he's dumb, but he's also not arrogant, and he has a set of moral values, and that alone makes him revered by the monsters in this world, because he's just like, he so flippantly does the right thing. And like, because he's powerful, but also because he does the right thing, people follow him. He's just a natural leader. And it's just so charming. And like, the characters are fun. The animation is fun. And like, you really want this whole like enterprise that he's got going to succeed, and like they have a nice peaceful world. I feel like I'm watching the beginnings of Star Trek, like Gene Roddenberry, right. Like his vision of a peaceful future where everyone gets along and nobody, and there's no war and anything. I'm just like, oh man, look at that. All these people coming together to live in a peaceful village and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it's so great.
Yeah,
I don't know why I like it so much.
That's the same thing with me. Like, there are some people who get really negative, and I feel like they only do that just so that way they can not like it. Because, like, it's the only way. Like, at worst, I could be mad with this show. And there's times where I have been with the slime because, and I'm going to spoil a little bit here, but that girl in the intro of the show with the mask, she means nothing.
Man.
She means absolutely nothing to this show. And she's advertised so goddamn much that I'm pissed off with it. Because she's in the show for like 2.5 episodes. And then she's not. And
she's not.
And I'm just like, that. Why are you...
It was one of those things. But it subverted the trope of like, oh, you're destined to be with her forever. And it's like, oh, good, here's the romance interest. And
no,
it's like,
it goes into the try and true. It goes into the overused one of, well, technically you are together. You always be together. She'll always be with you. And it's just like, fuck off, fortune teller. That's not how this works. What kind of a genie logic is this? That's like I asked for $1 million and there's $1 million deer on my front lawn. Like, that's the kind of logic this is. Oh,
I don't know why I found that so funny.
Because it's so true. So yeah, I'm actually thinking like there could have, like, especially this year, there probably could have been like a legitimate category for best isekai because there was so much that we had. I ended up watching
Year it feels like there's a lot.
Well, so there's not a lot of good ones this year, but I did watch one called How Not to Summon a Demon Lord, and I guess this could probably go into best comedy as well in a weird way. It's actually similar to Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime, because you've got an overpowered person summoned in. Basically, a guy gets summoned because of a ritual that goes bad in this fantasy world, and they don't end up summoning him. They summon him as his character from a video game. So it's kind of like already drawing from like inspiration on like 4 different levels at this point.
Yeah, I know, right?
So the only thing... So it's not like a in-depth thing. I'm not going to be able to praise it. There's nothing about this that makes me feel like this is something that is doing something different. What I'm going to say about this one is that this guy gets brought in and he's at like a level, like whatever his max level was at the gaming thing, so he's overpowered for this world. So what they end up doing is something that I'm actually appreciative for, and I don't even think the show knows it did this. Like, it's that, how can we make problems with somebody who can, like, blink another person out of existence? Well, he's got friends, and they can't blink people out of existence. Let's go after the friends. And that's what ends up happening, and it's actually really compelling, because it's like, okay, you aren't vulnerable, but your friends are. And it was cool to sort of see the show. Again, I don't think the show knew it was doing it. And if it did, well done, but, like, it was really cool to sort of see how he had to figure things out, and suddenly he looked much more limited and vulnerable because of the fact that he can't be everywhere at once. He's not an actual god, he's just an overpowered character. So, it was cool. I enjoyed that thing. I think that this thing, the show, ultimately, though, is super pervy. There's a scene in this where they have to exorcise this one girl, one of his companions, because she houses this demon inside of her, and he has to insert this like magical like icon crystal thing or something, and they talk about, I forget what the reasoning was, but they couldn't, like, cut her or something stupid.
Like, I don't like where you're going with
this. Very contrived reason, and you can already tell because they used the word insert, and they're like, well, there is another hole. And it was just like, no, you stop this.
Why couldn't they just put it in her mouth?
Because her vagina was right there.
Oh my god, did they really?
They did, 100%. It went right in that direction. I was like, this is a show. This is a show that's out there for anyone to watch. If they were to want to, this is just hentai. Well, speaking of that, there was that one show that came out called Conception. I don't know if you heard that one yet.
Oh my god!
But it's in another world where you have to get the girls pregnant to like, save
seriously.
Them.
This is like the ultimate evolution of trash anime.
No, there's one out there. It hasn't been made into an anime yet, but there's a manga that says in another world as a prostitute. Like, oh, legitimately, that's a title, and I don't know if that's going to be made, but God help us if it does, because that will be the death of cinema.
Oh, my God.
Oh, so, all right, we got off track for best comedy, but what do you expect? It's comedy. So let's go with best drama. There's probably a lot more than this, and I'm more than welcome for you to throw in some. I have the ones I've nominated: Run with the Wind, Bloom into You, Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai, Violet Evergarden, Darling in Franxx, Devilman Crybaby. I actually want to already add one. I'm going to do that right now, but it's Irodoku, World of Colors. If there's anything that show is, it's dramatic. So I'm going to put that in there if you want to.
Man, this is a meat grinder of a category, I will say.
Yeah, it's interesting, and there's probably a lot of other ones that could have gone in here, but I wasn't sure if I counted them as categories, like Megalobox or something, but that's kind of more...
Megalobox could probably go under drama or action, but I guess its intent was to be an action show, so I guess that's where you put it.
Right.
But like, it does turn into sort of a drama.
Well, you could count My Hero Academia in the same way, because
it's very shonen, but I guess anything can be drama. But I guess it's the if you're talking about the like the spirit of the show, these ones are pretty dramatic. I'd say that it's a close one for me between Rascal and Violet Evergarden.
Okay.
Right off the bat. Now, I never saw Devilman Crybaby. I know that was really good, and I haven't seen Irodoku, which I also hear was very good. Yes. And I haven't seen Run with the Wind, which I also heard was very good. So this is
these all are really good in their own ways.
this is the problem, is that like I just started getting really into anime in the last like 4 or 5 months, and so I'm still like catching up. So but of the ones that I have seen, fuck Darling in the Franxx right now.
I wanted to put Darling in the Franxx in here. I with no expectations that it would gain momentum to win. It was that first 2/3 of the show was so dramatic and good that like at the very least, I want to give a shout out that I haven't forgotten that.
Yeah, and that's fair. I would say that I would probably go with Rascal because I love it so much, but it's very, very close between that and Violet Evergarden because there were some really dramatic episodes of that. Like really,
I have two down.
It's almost a dead heat for me.
I have two down in the best moment or sequence for Violet Evergarden. Actually, three technically, but
it's almost a dead heat for me. What about you?
So Violet Evergarden, I think, is the strong standout, obviously, because that show basically was made to be dramatic. The other one that I am very close to picking is Irodoku, because of the fact that the whole thing just kind of reeks of drama as it goes along with Hitami and trying to regain not just her color vision, but also joy in the her own life and world around her. So, but I think for me, I'm pushing it to Violet Evergarden just a bit because, well, maybe not a bit, but because, like, I think that there's something about the fact that Violet Evergarden is all about, like, investigating emotions of certain people that for you know the situations that they all find themselves into, that it's literally feels like it's the discovery of drama and it's discovery of like what happens when the war that you fought for, you have to not only integrate yourself back into it, but you have to write for people who your war directly affected a lot of the times. I don't know if you got to see the OVA, the
13th. I have not yet, no.
Oh, man. So that one's not bad either. It's it takes place before the end of Violet Evergarden, but it involves a letter. Like, it involves the concept of people going to the train station, and they've got, like, their missing people that haven't come back from the war, like, pictures or notes and stuff on the bulletin board at the train station, so, like, checking to see if they're going to come that day, and if they're going to come that day and stuff. And her job in this one is to write a letter like that, but for this opera that's going on. So it also has to be almost in a song as well. And I thought that was interesting because of the fact that it linked back into Violet's past of fighting in the war to something a little like this would have been a great connector episode between the girl who has the playwriter who whose daughter dies from cancer to the episode with where she discovers the Major's fate. So it would have been a cool link between the two if they had released this in that order. But
gotcha.
But yeah, so that's why I think I'm going to go with Violet, just because of the fact that even though the show is so separated or is so episodic a lot oftentimes that, but like I think that it in this case for drama it actually works well for it because of the fact that you can kind of parse through each episode a lot of the times and go in with it just almost shotguns itself out to so many different moments of dramatic tension and sad moments and things then bring you back out of them that I think that's kind of a cool job for it to do.
Yep, I definitely agree. I
plus
really
the soundtrack is super
sad. pandas.
All right, so I'm fine with that. I think drama had a really good year as well.
Everyone had a good year.
I will say a shout out back to Bloomin' to You because I think half the reason I got confused was because of how much silly melodrama is in that show. So I mean, it's so much that it kind of hides its own meaning. But anyway, this is the category, one of the categories I was waiting for. This is best style. Copyright Giant Bobcast.
Style.
So the anime nominations for best style. This is not appearance. So this is not like how good looking the show is. Although that is somewhat of a factor. It's more of how does it use certain elements to build up its unique way of presenting itself. So. So Megalobox is a great example as number one, as the first choice in here is because of the fact that it purposely puts itself down into 480p to, make itself more like the 90s anime, look to it. So I have Megalobox, I have Bloomin' to You, I have Pop Team Epic, I have Aggretsuko, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Golden Wind.
Jesus, there's a lot.
I know. Zombieland Saga, Bookseller Honda-san, Devil May Cry Baby, Furikuri, both progressive and alternative, Golden Kamuy, Laid Back Camp, and SSS Gridman. So many S's. So, already I'm going to just knock off Honda-san, because I haven't seen it. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, I also haven't seen it. But I wanted to give shout-outs to them, because they all, between those and Pop Team Epic and Laid Back Camp,
Did you see Pop Team Epic?
No, and I it's on my list because dang, that's a great opening. But it just I just haven't gotten to it yet. Have you seen any of it?
I have not. No.
All right. Yeah. So apologize to Pop Team Epic. You look really good, and I don't. I think that your style is really cool. It's kind of like a crazier Aggretsuko, or maybe Aggretsuko is a more put together Pop Team Epic. I don't know. But I just didn't get a chance to watch you. But best style is where that kind of show would be in. So if we had more people who could round table this a little bit more, they could probably be fighting and be like, hell no, Pop Team Epic is style. It's almost for me, the reason I haven't gotten to Pop Team Epic and the reason I haven't gotten to Aggretsuko and the reason I haven't gotten to Honda-san is it's almost too different for me to want to jump into immediately. I feel like I need to ease myself or get into that mood to want to watch something that's so starkly different from everything that I'm okay with. Like, I almost have to wait for myself to reset before I watch these shows. So that's at least that's me making an excuse for that.
Yeah, I have not. I have similar feelings on it. It's kind of like you have to get in the right mind space.
Yeah.
So I that's one of the reasons I haven't tried Pot Team Epic yet.
Laid Back Camp looks like something from, like, as if they did Place Further Than the Universe, but in a backyard camping thing instead, or a summer camp. It looks really cool. I don't think that it's as stylistic as a lot of these other choices here, but I thought that the stylistic choice of it looked different enough that I just wanted to kind of mention it. Even though I haven't seen it, I've just seen a lot of things of it where I'm like, that is very different looking, and I'm kind of curious to see what you're about, but I just haven't gotten to it yet. I've heard it's also pretty funny. It just, again, haven't been able to watch it. So, Futakuni Progressive and Alternative, they're really cool looking in a garage band sort of a way, but I haven't watched them yet, so I don't know what to make of them. I don't know if it works for. I've heard the first season of Futakuni is really good, but I have no idea if. I've heard so many mixed things about Progressive and Alternative that I don't know if it. If they're just as good as the original or not.
So my initial instinct is going to say that this, for me, is between Megalobox and Devilman Crybaby.
Mm-hmm.
That's my initial instinct, just because, yeah, Megalobox had a very distinctive style.
Yes.
That was fleshed out by the direction and the artists and whatnot, and the animation, the creative decisions behind it were all in service of creating this very distinct feel, which was backed up by the soundtrack, backed up by the direction. Just everything was working together to create a visual and storyline tone, which I think is just the definition of great style. So, and I, at the same time, I haven't watched Devilman Crybaby, but I've seen enough like from fans and whatnot and videos to know that that is a show that has a very unique sense of style. And
yes.
So I wanted to definitely remark on that. So as far as, there are a lot of other really good ones on this list. Agretzko does have a distinct style, however it's more visual than anything, and the everything else is kind of like built into the same one joke, so it's fine. It's, you know, it's very low effort like to watch, but at the same time, like, I don't, there's just so much more effort wise and creative decision wise that goes into like something like Megalobox than just saying like, this is a very neat little animation style that we're going to use for this show, and that makes it a distinct style. Like, I mean, kind of, but
yeah. I was going to ask what the soundtrack's like on Agretzko, since it is sort of into the death metal kind of stuff.
Yeah,
does it use any of that other than for like just the intro?
That's, well, yeah. Like, the thing is, the whole thing is very, I'm trying not to be like overly insulting, because I do think that the show is funny.
Right.
It's the whole identity of the show is juxtaposition between what you would expect from this character and what they're actually like. And they're put, and you put Retzko in these positions where she deals with problems like any of us involved in her workplace and personal life that would cause frustration or distress. And she reacts differently because she's a death metal fan.
Right.
And, but that's the thing, is like, it's a funny joke, but it is the same joke over and over, framed different ways. The art style is distinct from other anime, which, and the death metal soundtrack, again, it's not constant because you have to juxtapose it with this like happy, flowery, sort of benign atmosphere that they use most of the time in order to get the joke to land when she does go off the handle. But the thing is, it's all kind of one note. So whereas Megalobox is like layers and layers of different world building and, you know, design decisions, and especially, you know, there was, since we're talking about this, the moment for me where they completely sold the like hip hop aesthetic and everything behind Megalobox was after Nanbu, I believe it's after he wanted Joe to throw his first match in Megalomania.
Megalomania.
And And then you have the that like hip hop ballad sung by, I think, the character, the voice actor that plays the kid.
Sachio. There it is. Thank you.
And that was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And like just, and that really sold it for me. So I think, you know, Gretzko had a distinct style, but it was punching way above its weight class if it thought it could compete with something like Megalobox or even Devilman Crybaby.
The other thing about Gretzko, and this is kind of the same with Honda-san, and maybe I don't know much about Pop Team, but possibly it too. The problem is, like, the reason why we don't have films listed in here is because they're a different beast because of their length. They have like an hour and a half to 2 hours long. Agresco and Honda-san have the opposite. They're only 15 minutes long per episode. And I think that that's a detriment to them with having to get matched up with these like heavier hitters because of the fact that they are longer each episode. Which is unfortunate, but like that's sort of how it just sort of, it's an all of a sudden you start to notice some obvious moments of this where like, oh, this could have been, maybe if this had more budget or something, who knows what the choice was. Maybe it was a stylistic choice. Hey, but anyway, so my case for Devilman, I think I'm going to ultimately settle on Devilman because I too have it between Devilman and Megalobox. So where it comes down for me is I think Megalobox is oozing with style. And if I hadn't seen Devilman Crybaby, I would have said that Megalobox would win best style of the year. But the problem I have now is I've seen Devilman Crybaby, and Megalobox is really, really stylistic. It looks like a 90s anime. It's got the hip-hop stuff in it. It's got the great boxing sort of like culture. But the problem is I've seen all that before. Even though I might not have seen it all together, it certainly all, like, they nailed that style, but that style has been done before. I haven't seen something like Devilman Crybaby, and right. It's so weird and so odd to it that, like, it's odd to see it in the best animation because it looks like shit in a lot of areas. Like, there is a moment where Akira is, like, smiling, and it's literally just, like, this fucking line that grows on his face. But, like, as, like, that's his mouth or whatever. And it's just a line. It's just simply drawn. It's, like, as if I'm watching someone draw this smile on his face. But, like, that's a stylistic choice that works really well with what Devilman Crybaby is. Also, just like Megalobox, it's got an amazing soundtrack that they use for a lot of effect because of the way the heavy synth weave is that it turns this into this like, almost lawless club-like feel to it, whereas if like you're like almost anything can go and like, you know, whatever, if it feels good, do it, kind of a feel, like a sort of a theme to it, but also is able to like bring itself back down to back down to earth for the sort of heaven and hell stuff that ends up happening. I think I'm going to go with Devilman Crybaby, which surprised me because literally like a week before I would have been a lock for Megalobox. So, but that's my argument at least.
No, it's fine. I mean, I don't disagree with that. I haven't seen it, so I can't disagree, I guess. But I mean, at the same time, like I've seen enough to know that like every point you made was valid. So
okay,
I need to watch it.
It's really good. So I hope I don't spoil too much for you when it comes up to best moment. So the next category is best soundtrack. We're gonna try to get through this quickly, but I have a lot of stuff I kind of want to just showcase. So there, I think that this year had really three big contenders for best soundtrack, and that's Megalobox, Violet Evergarden, and Devilman Crybaby. But that being said, I think there was a couple. In this case, SSSS Gridman had a good strong showing, and I don't think that Irudoku as a whole had a great soundtrack, but there is a song that I think should at least be mentioned as something that was really, really special in the show. So I kind of wanted to at least give a couple samples of these, and they won't be too long because, you know, we've got we gotta move it along to our next categories and stuff. But I'm gonna start with SSS Gridman, and I just kind of wanted to give you, Ian, since you haven't seen the show, a little sample of what it sounds like. And the first one's called 1144 United Full. And it's got that nice booming noise in the beginning. But it sounds Hollywood-esque. Like, I could see this in...
It does. Almost like a film.
Yeah, like a Marvel movie or something. But I think the fact that it's an orchestral kind of music to it is really good.
That's kind of uncommon nowadays.
Especially in anime. But, not to be outdone, it does have its weird music as well. And this is called HL29 Mysterious Vox. And I think that this is when really you kind of start to find, like, the show delves into Akane being a lot more alone with her revealing a little bit more to the audience, as well as she kind of throws the characters into a odd dream sequence where they kind of have to find their way out. But it surprisingly repeats itself quite a bit. But it does kind of get that weird, dreamy mood into, very well done. And then, obviously, I think it's the very first song I have linked here. But of... Whoops. That's the wrong link. That Gridman's known for. Oops. It's going right back there because of YouTube. That is more of the fight scene. But there's, like, I don't want to have to... I'm actually kind of glad I can't find it, because I hear this song so goddamn much. I think this is it, actually. Yeah, this one. Oh, my God.
Yes.
Not only is that the opening, but anytime Gridman does anything... they feel the need to spam that song. And by the end of the show, I am so sick of that song because of the fact that it does have a good soundtrack, but damn it, that song is getting old fast. So, but that's SS Gridman. I'm going to quickly do the one Irodoku song. I cannot find the soundtrack for this song online. So the only thing I can find is the scene that it was in, or the scene at least that has the least amount of talking in it. So I'll play that real quick. And it's actually in the first episode. Let's see if I can fast forward it a little bit. Just want to get a little of the piano in there. And it's just like the scene of Hitami, like, following, what's his name? I don't know. Ayo. Oi.
There's nothing quite like a nice piano to really, like, bring in the feels.
But, like, she sees the world as the black and white, and then sees his tablet, which has the color. And I think that there's something to be said about how striking they do black and white in this show. Grayscale.
God, I love the piano.
But yeah, so that's the song. It's very simple, but yeah, I just love what they do with that piano in this show, in that song, in that show. So anyway, let's go to the big three, Ian. So I'm going to start with Megalobox because we all love Megalobox. And I'm going to do the very first song called Drive, and it's my favorite from this entire show. And so for anyone who hasn't learned, you're about to be in for a real treat. And I am going to have to skip around a little bit just to get time restraints here. Skip ahead. But that's the scene that's played a lot of times when Joe's on the motorcycle. But the one I'm thinking of is when he's like riding in to like convince them that that they need to reschedule or rematch the him against Yuri or against.
Which is just one of the most epic moments of the entire show.
God,
Do you have the clip of the hip hop?
Yes.
What's his face is singing.
I don't know if it's that one specifically, but I think what the one you're talking about is Gearless Joe, and that's the one with Komachi. So let me see if that's the one. Let me know if that's this is it.
I think it's called We Are Bangai.
I have the non-rap one. That's my fault. Is that this one? Anytime
it is this tone, it is this instrumental, but it's the
anytime you've heard
scroll all the way down.
Anytime you've ever heard this show be mentioned, this is that's the song that they play. There it is.
Here, there it is.
Yeah, you're right. Yep, it's Sachio. Yeah, that was an epic moment. Like, there was a lot of weird, good...
It gave me, like, a mouth drop. I was like, what?
Yeah, there was a lot of weird rap moments this year. That was one of them. And then I kind of want to just do... So every fighter in the show gets kind of, like, their own little theme. And the one that stood out to me was Pepe Iglesias' theme. So, hang on.
He didn't last long.
I know, right? It could have been an interesting character. But yeah, so Megalobox comes out swinging. Hey. So let's move on to Violet. I mean, I've got other songs in here, but let's focused. Although I actually have more Megalobox songs listed here than the other ones. So Violet Evergarden, the very first one is going to be, if you've seen the show, you know immediately when this happens. And this is the song, Cross the Violet Sky, like when she's introducing herself to the person she's going to be writing for. And she says, like, Auto Memories Doll, Violet Evergarden. And then always her hair blows. And then, same song, but this is the one, the moment when, the scene I could think of the most is when she's trying to quote unquote walk on water.
Oh yeah, that was an amazing scene.
And then this is another one, like Gridman, full orchestra that just sounds fantastic. So that's Across the Violet Sky. Then we've got A Voice in My Heart.
Ah, yes.
sort of like that workplace, or maybe Violet's figuring things out on her own. A little cheerfulness is happening, but you know, a little solemn feel to it. And then this one is probably the saddest song, The Ultimate Price. And I like that it starts with a piano, and it starts to sort of escalate itself as it goes on with the song. So, right now, piano, and then you'll get... Let me see when it is. I think it's right here. Strings. But yeah, so Violet Evergarden, a very traditional soundtrack for an anime.
But well executed.
Yeah. So here's Devilman Crybaby. So the only one I don't have listed here is The Sabbath, which I think a lot of people have heard, because if you've ever looked up Devilman Crybaby reviews, that's the one they tend to use. So instead, I'm going to start with Judgment. And I will fast forward it because it repeats as well. Just give it a second to get a little of the dings in here. There it is. I think it's right here. Of course, I skip right to the drop.
I like that a lot.
So that's Judgment. The next one, Nighthawk. So Nighthawk, real quick. Let's see here. Whatever. So anyway, let's just continue on. Those are the, so, like, it has these synthweave songs to it, which is why, like, this song, From Here to Eternity, is so starkly different when it ends up getting played.
Oh, wow, that's different, tonally.
Oh, man, yeah. And if anyone has seen this show and are listening, you're bawling your eyes out right now because you know when this song's being played, and it's like the saddest moment you've ever known.
Oh, God.
And I'll skip ahead as well to the next section. That's the second half. So yeah, it's a weird beast. Devilman is, pun intended as well. So, but those are the ones that I thought came out swinging. And in terms of the big ones, it's between Megalobox, Violet, and Devilman. Ian, which ones would you pick? Which one would you have as the winner of the year?
I would probably go with, I'd say Violet Evergarden has probably the strongest soundtrack, in its totality.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that if I had to pick which one elicited like the strongest, like emotional response, like I really, really loved a couple of the moments in soundtrack wise in Megalobox. Like, I loved that that sudden rap drop by Sachio so much. Like, I have it on my workout playlist now.
Oh yeah, because you can use so much of this like Megalobox's soundtrack for like there's something almost for every moment in it.
Yeah, so I mean, like being able to really amp up the, I don't know, just the emotional feels and stuff, and like it was. So I'd say probably top to bottom, Violet Evergarden has a more well-rounded score, but as far as like Megalobox had the best standouts to me. So you know, it's kind of flipping a coin for me.
So for me, it's between Devilman and Megalobox, but I do agree with you with Violet. I think Violet has it's an extremely solid soundtrack where it's hard to find a weak point at any moment in it. I just don't think it hits the highs as much as Megalobox and Devilman do.
I agree.
For me, I think it's Megalobox because I think it lives and dies by its soundtrack. There's so much. And this show is so dripping in style with this kind of urban, like
hip-hop
rap
kind of feel.
Yeah, and I think that the soundtrack mixes in so much into that that it really pushes it over the top. Devilman Crybaby, I love this soundtrack to death, but I could honestly almost see like they could have done something different and it would have still been a good show regardless, because Devilman has so much silly amounts of style that like a different soundtrack I don't think would have taken away from how freaking stylish.
If you had
this.
Done a conventional score with Megalobox, then it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, I think it would have cheapened it dramatically. So this soundtrack, I think, helps it. Like it's like you could not pull this out from Megalobox, just like you couldn't pull almost anything out of Megalobox for it. Otherwise, it would all fall apart like a Jenga.
Cool.
All right.
Do you mind if we lightning round the last of it? So that
let's do 3-episode rule, Ian. This is just best debut, so to speak. So which 3 episodes really stood out for you the most? The lists I have: Rascal Does Not Dream About a Girl Senpai, Megalobox, Place Further Than the Universe, Violet Evergarden, Zombieland Saga, and Irudoku. You have not watched, I think, more than the first episode of Irudoku. I have, but even I don't think it's as strong as some of the other ones on this list. I just wanted to mention it because people need to talk about Irudoku more.
I think Rascal has the best hook because it has the My story in the first two episodes.
And that's where I'm falling with it as well, because at the end of the day, you could take that out and it would still be a good show if it was just those 3 episodes.
So that was, for me, that's true, but I think that has the strongest hook.
Yeah, Megalobox, he's just at the point where he lost his gear, so it's not exactly you're hooked yet.
Yeah, I'd say Zombieland Saga's second for me.
Yeah, because you've gotten through that rap and the heavy metal thing. Heck, the third episode almost doesn't even matter by that point because you've seen so many good parts in the first two.
Rascal, like, went the gamut of emotional range right at the beginning.
Yep. I will give a shout-out to Violet Evergarden because episode 3 is the one with her friend, the co-worker, who has like breaks her arm right before she gets contracted and goes to the birthday party with that her parents throw for her to try to get her a man. And that feeling of like she's already asked out her friend because she thinks that, well, we've been friends this whole time. Of course he likes me. And then he's like, well, I only like you as a friend. I thought that was a great third episode, and it desperately needed it after how bad the second episode... Well, not how bad it was, but the second episode was so flat in comparison to how good the third one was. But yeah, I'm going to go with Rascal because of just... You could pull that out, and it would work as its own show.
moment or sequence?
So, best moment or sequence... copyright Giant Bombcast. I've got a couple in here. You are more than welcome to add it, but since we're lightning rounding these last little bits, probably don't have the time. So the first one is I have the baton sequence in Devilman Crybaby. I have when Joe convinces the rematch against Mikio in Megalobox.
Oh, that one was a great moment.
When hell's yeah, because he was just goddamn on that motorcycle and Drive is playing. It's just like God, he's jumping the barricade. God, that was the moment where I just like almost silently or quietly said, this is cool as shit. Yuri removing his gear in Megalobox, where he's just like screaming for days as he's trying to recover. Mari Tamaki's mom finds out about the Antarctica trip from A Place Further Than the Universe. I don't have this one written down, but it's when Shirase, the girl looking for her mom, finds the laptop in the base in near the end of A Place for the Universe. I won't go into too much for your sake, Ian, but needless to say, that was an insane moment. The Deku figuring out how to rescue Bakugo without fighting in My Hero Academia Season 3. The 50 years worth of birthday letters in Violet Evergarden. Oh, if you want to...
That one is heartbreaking.
Oh, God. So, like,
absolutely
she's...
Absolutely heartbreaking.
You know the mom's working on something, and then you find out that it's a birthday letter for her daughter, but it's 50 birthday letters for the next 50 years because the mom is dying soon, and she still wants to wish her daughter a happy birthday and offer motherly advice and questions, and... Oh, it's sad. It's super sad. The next one would have been the saddest moment if the 50 years worth of birthday letters didn't exist, but it's the writer with the dead daughter seeing Violet walk, quote-unquote, on water, and he realizes that this is what his daughter wanted, because she asks, like, if I step on the lilies, do you think I can walk on water? And Violet's like, well, let's try it, and she uses her parasail, and she almost does it, but, you know, no one can really walk on water because they're not Jesus, and she just falls in. So, it's... Best CG moment of the year, I think, too.
Yeah, it was beautifully done.
And then when Violet finds out the fate of the Major in Violet Evergarden, honestly not as impactful, I think, as the other two. I think that plot just demanded this happen at a certain point. I also think that, again, Violet's past is kind of a weird premise that I didn't get on board for as much. So this one, it was super impactful for Violet because now something bad finally happens to her that she has to show emotion for. But compared to the other two, it's just not as... Like, I felt like, yeah, this is fine, but now I'm a little numb because I've seen worse. This is a joke, but also kind of serious. My son blushing in Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai.
Broke 1,000 hearts.
Oh, God, yeah. It's just so great how he strong-arms her to being honest about her emotions, and she always, like, has that little off-to-the-side blush because she doesn't want to look him in the eye. It's just cute. It's adorable. But, then I have Koga Tomo's confession in Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai. We went into that a lot in the last episode, or in the 2018 anime episode. But
so if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it.
Go back and listen to it. Download and then rate. And then Sakuta telling Ryo Futaba it's okay to hate herself in Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai. That was a complicated arc, and it was so cool how it was resolved, and because Futaba was thinking of committing suicide because her better half was doing all right without her, and Sakuta lets her know that it's perfectly normal and okay to hate yourself because trying to force yourself to like something just sounds exhausting. Yeah. And then last but not least, Hitome seeing colors for the first time in Irodoku, the World of Colors. I know it's still the first episode, and there are other times where she'll see it again, but there was something really magical about her seeing it, and up until that point, she had not smiled, and it's the first time she'll smile, and then she won't smile for a while longer, but it was just it was obviously something where this was very special to her because she has not seen colors in so long. To see it suddenly, even though it was a drawing, was very, very cool. So, for a brief moment, I just want to go a little bit about the baton sequence. Once again, great year for running in anime. But in Devilman Crybaby, it's all about these three friends who are on a relay team. And throughout the show, they're practicing their relay. And at the end of the final battle... the main character is thinking about this relay and all of his friends who have passed on the baton for him to get to this point. And what it ends up doing is it flashes into all of them being kids. And that song, From Here to Eternity, is playing. And what's happening is it goes from Mikio to Miki to Akira. And then he tries to pass it to Ryo, the villain, the antagonist. And then it just drops, and it sort of like bounces on the floor. And then it repeats again, and it tries it again, and then it drops. And he tries it again, and they're trying to get the baton to Ryo to help. Like, hey, you're our anchor. You're the last guy. You can do this. If you take the baton, we can save everyone. Do it. And Ryo just wouldn't get it. Like, he looks at the baton. He's just like, what are you supposed to do? What am I supposed to do with this? What am I supposed to do? And it's so beautiful, but it's so sad. And it's just like this, like, frustrating moment where he just won't take the baton. And it's so cool at the same time. And it's built on like so many other times where they're all in like tough straits and they're like, take the baton. And they're like in this invisible baton that they're passing, literally looks like they're passing on to the next person to like run to the next spot. It's really, really cool how they interweave that into the show. So anyway, Ian, which best moment or sequence do you like from 2018 in anime?
Oh, you're asking a lot.
I know I am. There's a lot of good ones too.
I think I'm just going to go with one that isn't on the list. Ooh. and I will go with the immediate after fight, the immediate climax and after the climax of All Might versus All For One, where he passes the baton to Deku.
Another baton.
another baton.
Where he like points out into the camera.
Yeah, where he points to the camera and like says, "You're next." And
yes.
Deku takes that to understand that it means it's his turn to step up, but everyone else thinks that he's talking about other villains who might be stepping up. But he, like, just the moment where the flame went out, it was just very, it was sad, it was triumphant, it was awe-inspiring, it was heartbreaking, it was everything. It was great.
And it's something you can, like, really dissect, too, because, yeah, he's telling it to Deku, and he's also, like, warning the villains, but all the, like, normal people or the not heroes, they also see it as, like, a challenge to sort of, like, be, to, like, step up and try to fill these shoes all together. And it was so cool, because who knows?
He was able to be triumphant, even when All For One was trying to rob that of him, he was able to still inspire people up to the end.
It was good. So for me, there's a lot of good ones here. I mean, I loved Tomo Koga, her confession in Bunny Girl Senpai, because I relate to that so goddamn hard. I think that Ryo Futaba being told to hate her, that it's okay to hate herself, was so unique of a solution for that that I did not see that coming. Like, a lot of times you expect him to try to comfort her and convince her to convince herself that she's okay with herself. But to actually go in, like, to dive deep into the crevasse and say, nah, it's fine. That's normal. Everyone feels like this. Like, because it's so true. Like, and I think a lot of people need to know that, because so many people hate a part of themselves, like, hell, I hate a part of myself sometimes, but, like, a lot of people are taught that it's wrong, and they don't address it, they just try to, like, say, oh, I'm better now, and I totally accepted it, and they totally didn't, but, like, he's saying legitimately, yeah, it's fine, you can hate yourself, so I love that, I think the baton sequence in Devilman Crybaby was my favorite moment, because of what it was built upon and how it was integral into the fight. Even though I'm not okay with how the show ends, because it sort of just ends. It just, and it's gone. And I'm just like, okay, I've seen shows do this and do it successfully. It felt like they needed two more episodes to get to that point. But that's how good the baton sequence was, that I don't care. I thought that was such a good sequence that I couldn't stop thinking about it. And there's so much, like, I don't want to spoil too much for you, Ian, but there's so much I could dissect out of that sequence and what, like, the metaphors that are going into and all the stuff that's happening around it, that it's like, I've been in conversations with people on Reddit about this. It's so fun to talk and look into it and to read stuff about it. It's a really good moment during for the year. So that's the one I'm locking in. But I loved a lot of these for obvious reasons. So
yep.
All right, that's the.
It was a great year.
God, it was a good year, and I hope 2019. We're getting One Punch Man, so I'm excited. So we'll see what happens with 2019, but it's gonna be it is a high hill to climb over.
I'm ready. I'm ready. My body is ready.
But and if you're ready out there, listeners, we have an email address for you to write into. So if you have moments that you think were good or better, that you think were deserving, if you have thoughts about why Bloomin' to You was the best anime of all time, or you found my thread on Reddit and thought it was interesting, feel free to write in at League of Mediocre Gentlemen at otnmedia.org. We also have a Twitter. It's at the LOMG podcast. There will be a Discord link in the description, but you have to go to the actual website to get there, unless your weird app podcast place lets you do it on your phone or smart or tablet. Last but not least, Twitch streams every Tuesday and Thursday at 8. Obviously not tonight because it's 10 p.m. already, and I decided to record a podcast instead. So, Ian, any last words? Any last thoughts? Recommendations?
It was a great year to get into anime, and I'm excited to continue to be an anime fan, and I'm excited to see what comes next.
Hells yeah, man. Me too. And I'm excited to talk about more stuff with you.
Me too, Richard. I am excited.
I honestly hope you watch Devilman Crybaby so we could do a podcast about it. Because it's so weird. So I need someone to talk to about this show besides just random people on the internet. But anyway, Ian. Let's hope that Crunchyroll has a good anime awards. I will try to improve. I don't think I tuned in last year, but I came in to find out the results. But it's February 16th, live from San Francisco. It'll be streamed on Twitch, apparently. So I don't know the exact time. I don't think they've posted it yet. But, you know, if you guys are interested in those kind of things, it'll be fun. Last year, Gigot was a part of it, which is always fun. But this year, he's not. So I don't know how good this actually will be.
Well, he only presented the one award.
Yeah, I know. But it's always fun to know that he's there making people laugh. So... Anyway, that sounded really corny. I apologize.
It's okay, buddy. Well, I'm excited to talk about this with you again. We need to make this a regular thing.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And so I think our next podcast, you, me, and Pat, we're going to do a mock fantasy baseball draft together. It should be a lot of fun. You guys get to hear us scream and complain that somebody decided to auto-draft Paul Goldschmidt in the second round. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But anyway... Ian, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and thank you all listeners who stuck with us for two episodes, over 3 hours worth of content for just anime awards. And that's us not even being able to have watched all the anime awards or all the animes out there. So imagine how long this show would have been if we had seen all these shows. So, yeah, anyway, I want to thank everyone again. Thank you so much. Leave us a review. Send us constructive criticism. We're always looking to improve because that is the ultimate goal. Because at the end of the day, we are all just mediocre. Thank you all and have a good night. Hey guys, it's Richard. Just kind of doing an after hours, little bit of moment here, because after recording this with Ian, the next day I decided to watch one of the shows that felt like a very Saturday morning cartoon show, and it was 12 degrees outside Fahrenheit, and that was warm compared to the rest of America at the moment. So I decided to try out Laid Back Camp, take it for a spin, see what's what. And I gotta say that I ended up watching the entire thing, all start to finish, the entire day. And man, that was a super enjoyable show for something that has almost no point to it plot wise. If there was a category for food porn, this show would be in it, along with what's on the menu for the Amiya family, or whatever that one show's called for the Fate Stay Night franchise. Also, man, it's the perfect show for cold days because it is just so comfy watching them all be, like, snug. That show made me smile the entire time that my face started hurting. There were so many funny moments in it. I guess it could be in the best comedy section because of, like, just the first scene I could think of that comes to my head is just the Shiba Inu that is on the leash and doesn't get to Rin, and then she smiles, and the second one's leash is longer, and it smashes her right in the gut. So many just like dry humor moments that just like had me just smiling. I don't know if I completely busted out laughing the whole time, but the show was a slow burn of just smiles the whole way through. The music was absolutely phenomenal.
it could have gone into the best soundtrack. I think that the music is similar to Megalobox in terms of the show lives and dies by it a little bit. You could have, like, different music. Maybe it might work, but the music in this felt like that kind of summer campy vibe, and which is weird to say because this is in the winter. But, you know, like, that camp kind of tunes that you would have. Like, something I would expect in, like, the video game Psychonauts, or, like, those, like, stereotypical summer camp sort of moments in it. I thought that the art was absolutely great. The backgrounds, landscapes in particular, reminded me of Firewatch or any of those, like, you know, early national forest park sort of advertisements of pictures and stuff. That's the vibe I got, which all with that, the soundtrack, the characters, just all of it just added together to make an extremely good and effective show. So, geez, like, this show's just the cute, charming version of Megalobox for me. It did its job, and it did extremely well. I don't know if I could say what category it would 100% win at compared to other ones, but it is something that, now that I've seen it, I have to at least give a mention to it, because, holy crap, that was a good show, and I kind of wish there was more, because it's still, like, 12 degrees outside where I'm at, and I might just rewatch it again, just because it has that sort of comfy feeling to it. But I do want to say that if anyone hasn't watched this show, you need to beware, because eat something before you watch it, because it just makes you want to eat food, and if you're already hungry, you are going to go on a huge, like, food spree, and that could be really bad, because this show made camp food look so good and so delicious. And yeah, so I just wanted to kind of give that little shout out just to Laid Back Camp. I think that it is a very special little show that has a lot of charm and a lot of just good vibes and good feels to it that, you know, you don't get a lot of times. I think the only show that comes close to wholesomeness was A Place Further Than the Universe, but not to the same degree that this is. This is a whole nother level of wholesome. So, anyway, just wanted to give that shout out to that show. It deserves all the praise in the world. So, thanks, guys.